Tuesday, March 15, 2022. Members, today we have five bills. Only one is going to be actually leaving the committee, so we'll take a vote. That will be my bill, Senate File 3751. Otherwise, all four of those other bills will be laid over at this point. So, with that, we do have a quorum, just so it's on the record. We start out with Senate File 2954, Senator Coleman. And this is Pipeline Conservation Program Appropriation. Senator Coleman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I think this is my first time here.
I think it is. Generally, donuts usually come along with this.
Well, people have to tell me.
You missed the memo, did you?
I clearly did.
All right. Well, again, welcome to the committee. Go ahead with 2954.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will add I brought Brugger's Bagels, though, today up on the second floor, so
that'll
not quite donuts.
That'll work.
Well, thank you, Chair Ingebrigtsen and committee members. I'm here today to present Senate File 2954, which develops a pipeline conservation program in the state. Minnesota is blessed to have an abundance of natural resources, and we collectively share the responsibility to protect and maintain our environment for the next generation. Our state takes this responsibility seriously, and we lead the nation in efforts to preserve, protect, and enhance our habitat for our future leaders of tomorrow. Minnesotans, again, have the opportunity to be at the forefront of the conversation and provide strong leadership to our neighboring states on environmental best practices. There is a real opportunity to advance our best practices by tapping into the significant untapped conservation potential of pipeline right-of-way and easement land. Recently released federal guidelines provided some regulations for environmental protection activities along roads and highways. The American Petroleum Institute saw an opportunity to advance those federal guidelines by taking a holistic approach to conservation solutions and develop best practices for the development and management of land along pipelines for its members. There are 2.9 million miles of pipeline in the country, and Minnesota has over 40,000 of those miles, which creates significant opportunity for proactive environmental stewardship. This bill seeks to promote environmental sustainability, enhance conservation efforts along the rights-of-way of pipelines, and create, develop, and maintain proactive partners. The bill looks for a one-time appropriation to the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources to administer grants to nonprofit conservation groups and secondary and post-secondary schools. It should be noted, none of the money would go to for-profit companies. Conservation eligibility and activity would be broad and allow for native vegetation, pollinator-friendly forbs, and other diversity, and the grantee would enter into an agreement with the pipeline operator. Together, we can create thousands of miles of habitat corridors across our state and set the trend in the nation on conservation solutions. And Mr. Chair, I do have a testifier, I believe, over Zoom, Mr. Robin Rorick, Vice President of the Midstream at the American Petroleum Institute.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Rorick, are you there?
I am indeed, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, please identify yourself and welcome to the committee.
Great, thank you, Chair Ingebrigtsen and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. Thank you as well to Senator Coleman for her leadership on conservation. My name is Robin Rorick, and I am Vice President of Midstream Policy at the American Petroleum Institute. API represents all segments of America's natural gas and oil industry, which supports more than 11 million jobs across the country and is backed by a growing grassroots movement of millions of Americans. Our nearly 600 members produce, process, and distribute the majority of the nation's energy. API was formed in 1919 as a standard-setting organization and has developed to date more than 700 standards to enhance operational environmental safety, efficiency, and sustainability. I'm here today to express API's support for SF 2954, which establishes a conservation program for pipeline rights of way in the state. This effort is among the first of its kind in the country, and we commend you for your leadership in this space. As Senator Coleman pointed out, there are more than 2.9 million miles of pipelines in the U.S. transporting natural gas, oil, and their products across the country. Because of this vast network of pipelines, we have access to the energy that fuels cars, fire trucks, and other emergency vehicles, as well as a vast array of military vehicles. Pipelines also deliver natural gas that powers our homes and factories, and for many homes in Minnesota provides heat and the fuel for cooking. Pipeline rights-of-way are not dissimilar from highway or electricity utility rights-of-way, ranging from 25 feet wide to several miles. They assist operators in monitoring their pipelines 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they enable access to conduct maintenance inspections and other operations. Operators implement robust safety programs, including the deployment of advanced inspection and leak detection technologies to maintain safe and secure operations. And while safety is and will remain the industry's highest priority, there are significant opportunities to use rights-of-way land to preserve and even advance environmental and habitat conservation. Over the past several years, many pipeline and energy infrastructure operators have recognized these opportunities and invested in conservation projects to improve the environmental sustainability of their rights-of-way. Companies are finding opportunities to switch from a tactic of pure mowing to taking a more strategic approach that will improve local ecosystems. Some companies have, for example, focused their efforts on planting native species that will keep out invasives, cultivate habitats for native pollinators, as the senator pointed out, and increase biomass and species biodiversity. These efforts prove that the oil and natural gas industry can, in fact, protect and even improve the environment, and at the same time provide the reliable energy in a safe manner. Ultimately, these efforts demonstrate through tangible actions our commitment to protect the communities and environments where pipeline operators live and work. In 2021, API, working with our member companies, released a set of community engagement guidelines to aid the industry in its efforts to engage with the community when building pipelines. Last month, we released a new set of conservation guidelines to build upon these efforts. Offering assessments and innovative techniques, these guidelines provide pipeline operators a roadmap for implementing best practices while meeting safety standards to help ensure the nation's pipelines operate under a lower emissions footprint and that habitats and wildlife in surrounding areas are sustained for generations to come. API is now working with operators to establish similar pilot projects across the country to what we did in South Louisiana, working with Shell Pipeline, TC Energy, and Friends of the Biotech Refuge, where in that case, we launched a joint conservation effort and established a right-of-way pilot on the refuge. That project will address key environmental challenges such as climate change, erosion, habitat loss, and species biodiversity, while at the same time providing substantive opportunities to engage with local communities and community groups. In partnership with Pheasants Forever, we are now looking at ways our industry can engage with local communities and conservation organizations to advance our ongoing commitment to environmental protection and stewardship. As a leader in environmental programming, Minnesota could play a key role in expanding this conservation program within the state. API welcomes SF-2954 as an opportunity to advance in Minnesota our ongoing conservation efforts and restore land areas surrounding operations in a manner that protects and often enhances the surrounding environment. As the senator also pointed out, no state funding would go to pipeline operators. Instead, conservation nonprofits, as well as secondary and post-secondary schools, among others, could apply for grant funding to develop their own conservation program for addressing vegetation management, to tackling invasive species, to protecting native pollinators. Grantees would then enter into an agreement with pipeline operators to turn their vision into reality. Our industry is excited to partner with conservation groups, schools, and the Minnesota government to advance this innovative partnership that would develop sustainable conservation programs tailored to the unique beauty of Minnesota and lead the country in conservation. To that end, we look forward to working with you, Chair Ingebrigtsen, Senator Coleman, and others on the committee and within Minnesota to advance our shared goals of providing reliable energy while also advancing environmental protection. So I want to thank you and the Senator for the opportunity to speak to you today. I look forward to answering any questions you may have.
Thank you for that. And I know that was all off the cuff. It wasn't practice. Very good. Just one question, and maybe there's going to be more. So you have 40,000 miles in Minnesota alone. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay, times 25. Do you know how many acres that ends up to be? Does anybody know?
I don't know, Senator, and it's probably going to vary based on the size of the right.
Okay. Well, this is an exciting program. I to be able to have basically restoration conservation underneath and around the pipeline, knowing that you still have access by vehicle to do any repairs and or you said, I think, anybody from, you know, the emergency services as well. Members, any questions? Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my question, I guess, is to the author and Mr. Rorick. Why are these funds for restoring the devastation that's done by putting pipelines in expected to come from taxpayers instead of the petroleum companies that own the pipeline?
Thank you for the question, if I may, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Senator Coleman.
I just think this is a good step in the right direction to help out not-for-profit companies start to do some good in this conservation area.
Mr. Rourke, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Senator. The pipeline companies already maintain their right-of-ways, and they have the responsibility to restore those right-of-ways. This is actually, Senator, taking a new approach and advancing conservation within those right-of-ways. It's taking a smarter approach and allowing habitat and environmental biodiversity growth. The money would not go to any of the companies. The money would go to assist nonprofit organizations as well as schools like the University of Minnesota to actually getting engaged and helping them partner with these efforts.
Can I respond?
Follow up? Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Well, I guess where I'm coming from is the companies who benefit from this petroleum going through these pipelines are the ones that destroyed the habitat and want the public taxpayers to pay $2,500,000 to repair it. And, you know, not that I object to restoring habitat, but I don't think that the public taxpayers should be the ones to fund it.
To that point, Mr. Chair.
Senator Eichhorn.
I would encourage you, Senator Eaton, to come take a look at what a piece of land looks like after they've done a pipeline. It's not completely desecrated. It looks like a green field. It's actually very pristine in a lot of places. You'd have no clue that a pipeline was ever there. All this is doing, and this isn't the companies asking for this, this is an opportunity to do additional conservation so that there are additional outdoor opportunities. These companies have not desecrated the land. I really encourage you to come take a look before talking about things and some of the districts of us, what they look like, because obviously you don't know, and it's really frustrating to hear comments like that. This is a good thing to do. This is a good thing to try it, and I thank Senator Coleman for bringing this forward, because this is, you know, maybe this is a good program. Maybe this is something we can do to increase our conservation efforts. And I see like Pheasants Forever are behind it. Maybe there's extra pheasant habitat. We need that right now too. We know there's habitats that have been destroyed, not by pipelines, but other things. This is an opportunity to rectify that and get additional habitat. So thank you, Senator Coleman, for bringing this forward. And I would certainly be more than happy to host you, Senator Eaton, if you want to see what a completed pipeline looks like.
Any follow-up with that, Senator? Okay. Senator Torres Ray, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I very much hope that that you, as the chair, call the attention of members who criticize the input and the comments of members. We have the right to, we have an election certificate, we have the right to say that, and to hear Senator Eichhorn criticizing Senator Eaton is quite offensive to me. So I hope that, Mr. Chair, you are able to call the attention of members. Senator Coleman, I do have a question also related to this. I happen to have had spent some time around Line 3, and it is clear that there's a lot of investment in these type of efforts by the companies. And so could you elaborate a little bit more about, you know, what is kind of the additional value of this? Because part of what I fear with this investment is that you could you know, that people feel like, well, you know, you have all of these dollars in here, so why don't you come and do it? We don't no longer have to take care of this, of these projects, because there is funding available from taxpayers to address these issues. So could you elaborate a little bit more about, is there, you know, part of the legislation that will require that, you know, the companies continue to do it, but this is kind of an additional enhancing, so that it is clear that you're not, you know, that with this funding that you're providing now, the companies just don't have to do it, because, you know, these nonprofits or these organizations kind of will come and do the job on their behalf. Could you tell us a little bit about how the legislation could work with that, or are you open to establish some of that?
Senator, would you like that, or Mr. Rourke, whichever?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Senator. I believe my testifier touched on that a bit about how this is in addition to, and I'll let Mr. Rourke highlight that again.
Mr. Rourke.
Thank you for the question, Senator Torres-Ray. It's a great question. To be clear, pipeline companies are required by federal regulation to maintain their pipeline right of way. The guidelines are fairly loose, though, and so a lot of companies interpret that as strict mowing. This is an opportunity to actually take a more strategic approach and manage those rights of way in a way that advances biodiversity, environmental habitat conservation, grow native species, keep out invasive species. And so so they are required to maintain their pipelines. This is an opportunity to go above and beyond all of that. And this money, to the previous senator's question, would go to give opportunities to organizations, not pipeline companies, but other organizations that otherwise would not have an opportunity to participate in these efforts, to increase that partnership, to make sure that the work that's going in is actually more robust and more well-rounded in its thought.
Would you like a follow-up, Torres-Ray? Senator Torres-Ray.
So I have a, you know, Mr. Rourke, you have said that they already do this work. So it seems like, you know, it's not necessary, but then you said they don't, they're just mowing. So do they or they don't? Are we guiding? Are we asking them to put the money, or are we gonna put the money for them so that this work gets done with taxpayers?
I'm sorry.
Mr. Rourke.
So I apologize, I wasn't clear, Senator. So they are not required to do conservation management programs and do species biodiversity. They're required to maintain the right-of-ways, which a lot of companies just interpret as strict mowing. So this is an opportunity for companies to go above and beyond all of that and to partner with organizations, conservation organizations, schools, or otherwise within your state to make sure that when they go above and beyond and they're looking at doing conservation programs, that they're actually considering all of those variable inputs, as well as developing partnerships to maintain their right-of-ways in a different way. Does that help, or is it still confusing?
Thank you, Senator Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Good.
So.
Follow up. Go ahead.
Senator Coleman, what I think you have is a tremendous opportunity to really figure this out, right? So there is an opportunity to really look into what is necessary, what is not necessary, what they are doing, what they are not doing, what they are funding, what they are not funding. And I would like to encourage you and members, co-authors, to look into that, because I think that I really believe in your intention. I really understand what you're trying to do, and I appreciate that intention. In the practical term, I think what we have right now is, in my opinion, kind of a source of funding that may create a larger gap. These are companies that have tremendous amount of resources, tremendous amount of money to do this work. And you're creating an opportunity that should go in this direction, but you're using taxpayers' dollars in order to do this. And it's significant, $2.5 million to do the work that they're supposed to be doing to begin with is really something that I would encourage you to have a further conversation and figure out, you know, how can we take better advantage of an idea that I believe is good, but I believe the source of funding and how we're going in practical terms about asking the taxpayers to do the work that these companies need to be doing is, I don't think I can support that. But I thank you for what you're bringing to us in terms of understanding how this works.
Thank you, Senator Torres Ray. Senator Eaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just wanted to clarify a little bit. My bigger concern is not that it looks nice. I know I've seen the pipelines where they do look like a nice field and they'd mow, but it didn't start out that way. It started out as natural habitat that had a variety of different plant species and so on. And that's the part that's been removed when the pipeline's put in. And I would prefer that restoration plan, when petroleum company contracts to do the pipeline, be that they return it to the natural habitat they took out when they put the pipeline in, rather than the nice field that they mow.
Any further questions? Well, Senator, I really appreciate you bringing this forward. I haven't seen anything like this, and I think it's probably one of the first in the, I think one of the first in the nation where pipelines have actually, you know, instead of being pounded on and constantly criticized for bringing the consumer everything that they need at a daily basis, and actually going an extra mile here, not only just planting grass, but allowing access for post-secondary and secondary schools to organize conservation on these particular parcels of land. Members, understand the petroleum folks are giving permission to access that, to do that work, which is going to be, it's going to be tremendous. It's going to be fabulous for our bird population, for even the whitetail population. It's not just going to be mowed grass, it's going to be habitat. And to have that ability to do that full scale, 40,000 miles potentially, I don't know how many thousands of acres this will include, but it'll be a lot. And as always, here in this committee, we've spent countless dollars and moved forward with many different projects and conservation and environment projects. And to the credit of the not only us, but also the voters and the taxpayers that actually want this kind of stuff done. We've done a lot of it over the years, and it's a good thing we're able to continue. And this is a great program. So I thank both of you for your testimony and for bringing this forward. Final comments, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the conversation and for consideration of this bill. I think this is a great and creative way to enhance conservation efforts and partner with some nonprofit organizations and higher educational institutions. And I just greatly appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senate File 2954 will be laid over. Thank you very much, Senator. Next up is Senator Bach, 3421, Senate File 3421.
Not so sure it's really fair to bring these big guys with you. Is it that you need the protection, or you're trying to influence the committee?
Welcome to the committee, Senator Bach. Senate File 3421, which we happen to see quite often when it comes to all-terrain vehicle trails. And I can tell, I don't have to tell you how far we've come over the years in funding these. In fact, actually, they take care of themselves, and it's a tremendous, tremendous opportunity. But go ahead with Senate File 3421.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and you're correct. I've been in front of this committee before asking for money out of the off-road vehicle account to work on a trail system, and I have with me two constituents, one from the Voyager ATV trail system, one from the Prospector system outside of Ely. And We've already got a pretty significant ATV trail system in northeastern Minnesota. It's an easier place to build trails because we've got a lot of public land. but these clubs are doing an outstanding job building out this trail system. Our hope is to be able to get from the Iron Range all the way to International Falls. That's our goal. And it will provide a whole new kind of tourism opportunity for the businesses that rely on tourism in the area. And pretty proud of my constituents for the job they've done. And just like when the Snowmobile Trail system was built, the grant and aid system, it's being done on the backs of volunteers. It's amazing all the people giving of their time to work on this. But you know, the bridges and all the kind of mitigation work and the contracting out stuff's not free, so it can't all be done by volunteers. But Mr. Chairman, we're requesting $500,000 for the Voyager ATV system and $500,000 for the Prospector system. And I guess I'd like my constituents, whoever wants to go first, lay out what their plans are, their vision is.
Senator, thank you. My name is Nick Wagnum. I'm the president of the Prospector Loop Alliance. I'm also the secretary of the ATV Minnesota board as well. The Prospector Loop is a nonprofit group made up of representatives from Ely, Tower, Babbitt, Embarrass, and all the way down to the North Shore in Lake County. We've been working on this project for 8 years now, over 8 years, and our goal is to connect those communities and the North Shore together with a 250-mile loop of trails. Before I go any further, if I could just enlighten you just a little bit on how this is working up in our area. I'm a township clerk as well, and we had an 80-year-old lady at one of our meetings, and she said, "I hear you're going to St. Paul to ask for money for a trail." And I said, "Yes." She goes, "You tell them this," she said. "I love to go out ATVing. I may be old, but I don't like it when it's cold, so I don't snowmobile, but I love my ATV." She's on her second one in 3 years. So it's just great to see people getting out and enjoying our trail systems. And this bill will help us complete some sections that we've been hoping to get done in the near future. The first one is a connection from the Colquay Line to the Echo Trail, just north of Ely. It's a former railroad grade crossing. We're just putting it back in over the river. The second one is a connection to the Boys Fort, their band property on Highway 169. Then it continues on to Pfeiffer Lake, which will connect us to the Voyager system and over to Quad Cities as well. Kind of a meeting place for all three of those. The third one is a Bear Run Trail. This will connect several resorts and the David Dill Taconite State Trail as well. There's a network of existing forest roads there and some great possibilities for remote camping sites. It was actually Representative Tommy Recavina who really wanted to see that one done, and we're just proud that we're being able to hopefully make that a reality after all these years. Our final connection is from Babbitt to Hoyt Lakes, which then will get riders over to the Iron Range OHV State Recreation Area in Gilbert. So we'd like to make that connection as well. Currently, we're working on the environmental assessment worksheet for these projects. We've partnered with the DNR to get that done. We're in the process of heading into public comment and so on for that part of it. As you know, I'm sure that ATV traffic has increased because more people are buying them. We've seen an increase in sales, 5% up from 2020, 10% up from 2019. So there's more and more out there, and we need to make trails for people to be able to ride on. I mentioned our board has been working on this for almost 9 years. We have a membership base well over 200 people who are able to help us with projects. As Tom mentioned, the volunteerism is really what makes it all work in the end. And as a member of the ATV Minnesota Executive Board, you probably know we've been working on a master plan for the whole state of Minnesota so we can determine what areas could use more trails and what areas we should focus on next. Your support of our request will help further those opportunities in Northeast Minnesota, and I'd like to thank Senator Bach and Senator Eichhorn for their support of this bill. Thank you.
Good morning.
Thank you for that. Good morning. Welcome.
I'm sorry, I'll wait.
Very familiar face.
All right. Good morning, Chairman Ingebrigtsen and committee. My name is Bruce Bestie. I'm from Crane Lake. I'm here representing Voyager Country ATV with 900 members. I chair the St. Louis County Trails Task Force, which we work with several different types of trails. I'm the vice chair for the ATV Joint Powers Board, which is Lake County, St. Louis County, and Coochin County. project. I'm also Region 2 Director for ATV Minnesota, and I'm happy to say today that I've got time for all of these things because I retired. I sold my resort last year to David Dill's son, Drake, up in Crane Lake. So thank you for the support you've given us so far. Today, I'm excited to be here to ask for funding for an important expansion we call the Cooch County Connection. So I've got a handout there for you, and on the handout, the blue represents current open corridor routes and trails for ATVs. The red represents our projects that we'll be working on beginning this summer. Many of those are enhancing the David Dill Arrowhead Snowmobile Trail to allow for multi-season use or all-season use, and a couple important overlooks. The green, that represents the Cooch County Connection to get us from the Iron Range to International Falls and over to Ely and over to the North Shore. We're going to need to have a Cooch County Connection. We don't have the alignments yet. We're thinking that it's going to cost us about $35,000 to identify those alignments so that we can submit an EAW phase two for those trail alignments, and then use some of the money for construction. We've requested some bonding. We've put in a request for federal RTP grants, recreational trail program grants, and some IRRRB monies to help us with these projects. So that is what we're looking to do, move forward. And I thank you very much for the time.
Thank you very much to both the testifiers. Now we'll open it up for any questions if you have. And probably what I should do is check with Mr. Mueller as well, check on the account so people understand this comes out of an account that the four-wheelers pay for themselves. Mr. Mueller?
Mr. Chairman and members, that currently the ATV account spends about $8.9 million per year on regular operating costs and has about that amount of money coming in per year between the registrations and the portion of the gas tax. So it's structurally balanced, but there is about a $4.7 million available fund balance in this account that we could use for one-time costs such as this. Similarly, last year we spent about $2 million of one-time money for these two trail systems between the two of them and some other costs. So there is available one-time money to do this. If we did this bill, and we also had one other bill earlier this year that was about $447,000 for the Roseau ATV trail resurfacing. So if we did all these one-time costs, there would still be about $3 million left of fund balance in the account.
And that's an account, Mr. Mueller, that grows, continuously grows with the activity and the purchase of cheap fuel.
Mr. Chairman and
I
members.
I think they have cheap fuel up there where they come from.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, the account gets its revenue from ATV registrations and also from a portion of the gas tax.
Right.
And if the gas tax stays high, yes, more money would go into this account.
Okay. Very good. All right. Members, any other questions? Senator Dibble, I'm sorry, I missed you here.
Yeah, hiding out here on the Zoom.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Just a couple of comments, and then just some kind of technical questions, I guess. First, Senator Bach, I support this. I think when we develop ATV trails, we do a good service by the environment because we have folks traveling on those developed, those recognized recreational corridors, which helps, with the issues of ATVs kind of wandering off into places where environmental damage might occur outside of the developed trail. So this is great, and I appreciate that. And also, I know ATV, per the letter that was read earlier, is super fun. People really love it. It represents some, economic development activity, both internal to the economy of Northeast, because a lot of folks up there enjoy it, but a lot of folks don't go up there to do that. So this is great. My question, and I know this is, internal to the ATV fund, it's not general fund, but as I read the bill, I see it is to be taken counted as the local match, and I just don't know how that typically works. If but for this bill, would the local communities be being asked to put up some dollars as the, you know, quote, local match? That's question number one. And question number two is just checking to see that, you know, kind of the larger ATV advocacy community is in support of this level of dedication or appropriation to this facility versus, you know, having something to say about, you know, whether or not it's being too concentrated in this one area versus more statewide.
Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Sherman, on the issue of local match and the environmental issues around ATVs, I remember back in the 70s, I got my first snowmobile in 1964, and then snowmobiles really started to take off. And there was a point in time you could drive across the Iron Range and there was two of them in every yard. Everybody had two, but there was no trail system. So the snowmobile industry absolutely collapsed in the 80s because people had sleds, there was nowhere to ride them. We were at some risk of that early on, Senator Dibble, with the ATV situation, because the ATV, the popularity of them was growing and we had no trail system for them. So they were spending time in ditches, driving off-road, and fortunately, we learned something from the work of MinUSA and the snowmobile volunteers that you have to have a trail system for people to ride on. So, and the easiest place to create one is where you have a lot of public land and especially a lot of forest roads. Most of what were of these trail alignments are on existing logging forest roads, for lack of another name for them. And then on the local match issue, a number of years ago at the IRRRB, which is local property tax dollars, we started a trail program and started putting money into these ATV trail projects. And just in this fiscal year that ends on June 30th, we have the last budget here a year ago, we appropriated $2 million for trail work. So, and none of that is any oversight by the agency. Those are direct grants to clubs that want to build trails. So I think that shows that it's a tourism opportunity, a diversification of Northeastern Minnesota's economy that's important, and that's why we're pushing significant local dollars into these projects also.
Senator Dibble, follow up.
Oh, and then my final question, does the larger ATV advocacy community support this idea?
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I don't know who you are. Please identify yourself.
I'm Tom Hackbarth. I represent ATV Minnesota, along with Ray Bone, who couldn't be here today.
Okay.
And to Senator Dibble's question, yes, we do support this proposal 100%. We've done this before where we've taken money from the ATV account, the dedicated account, and sponsored bonding bills to work as the match for bonding proposals. And we do support the bonding proposal as well.
Okay, thank you. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Okay. Members, any other questions of the testifier?
Dan?
Dan?
Mr. Chair and members, Dan Larson, Minnesota
This is the Environment Committee. You were looking at your document there. It's the Environment Committee.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right.
Copious
all right,
notes
okay.
here.
Yeah, this one. You looked a little confused.
You're in
there.
For a come treat on. Here. So, Mr. Chair and members, thank you. Dan Larson, Minnesota Four Wheel Drive Association, here to support Senate File 3421, All Terrain Vehicle Trails Appropriation, and to thank Senator Bach and Senator Eichhorn for their leadership on this committee, on this bill. It's been a while since I've testified, and I can't remember if I can offer amendments or not, but if I could, I would start with renaming the bill. And so the first part's okay, all terrain, but I would include and off-road vehicle trails appropriation. We like both of these trails, and we have plans for ourselves and both of them. So when you think of OHVs, off-highway vehicles, you think of ATVs, off-highway motorcycles, and perhaps off-road vehicles, and you could be forgiven for overlooking off-road vehicles. We're 95% Jeeps and Range Rovers, and there's a portion of our membership that likes to do more challenge routes and more challenging events. But you're going to start hearing from us more, and we're working to disabuse you of that notion of overlooking the off-road vehicles. We've got close to 20 exciting projects in the queue now. We've worked for many years to get to this level, and it's headlined by the border-to-border touring route. So that's a project that we've been working on with in partnership with the DNR for many years now, and it's in the final phases of coming online. People are already using it, but imagine nobody really drives sedans anymore. Everybody drives off-road or all-wheel vehicles. A touring route for highway-licensed vehicles on roads that already exist, taking you through some of the deepest and most scenic rural areas of the state. And we've got rural members here who know there are secrets in rural Minnesota that the rest of the state doesn't know about and beckons for them to come and visit. A campground in a deep rural area of the state can be a significant economic benefit to that area. So we're very excited about that project. And so we invest. A key concern or a key principle with our group is we invest in areas that welcome us. So, and we build deep, meaningful, and mutually beneficial relationships. So we support both these bills, not just because all the money comes out of the ATV fund. We're okay with that, but the off-road vehicle fund has put money into both of these programs and both these projects over time. So I'll just wrap up. Let me just say that. But you've seen things like master plans. We've had with our group, Minnesota Four Wheel Drive Association, we took a step back and had a chance, a benefit to us being last in this list of building trail systems, and it's our intent to build a state-of-the-art, socially and environmentally significant, state-of-the-art touring and trail system that's really the equal of no other in the state or province. And you do that with sitting back and looking, taking the best of what ATVs and snowmobiles and even motorcycles have done and incorporating that into your plan. You've seen master plans come through this committee, statewide master plans for ATVs and off-highway motorcycles. Well, ours was the first group to incorporate that. And we'll be completing our statewide master plan in June. The idea there is to reach out, to touch base with local communities, to do back and forth in terms of what works best for you. And so we're very proud of the initial steps we've taken, which are significant. What's not significant right now is the number of trail miles that we have, and so watch for us. That's the message to you today, and both the Voyager and the Prospector are part of that plan.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Senator Bach, any final comments?
No, Mr. Chairman, just want to thank you and the committee for your consideration of this, and I was just sending a text to Senator Thomasoni, and he told me, he said, it's a good bill, vote for it.
Yeah, of course, of course. Glad to hear from him. Yeah, absolutely. So Senate file number 3421 will be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much, Senator Bach.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Senator Ruud, Senate file 3392.
And before we get started, members, you'll notice in your packet you have several documents here in support of this particular bill, of Senator Rood's bill, from the American Boating Club, as you can read, National Marine Manufacturers, Tonka Bay, Minnesota Lakes and Rivers, Minnesota Coalition of Lake Associations, so a wide range of folks that are here. If they're here, fine. If they're not, you have that support in your file. So, but I do see some testifiers here. But Senator Rood, go ahead with Senate File 3392.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an amendment to the bill.
Yes,
would you like to do that first?
Yes, please do that. Go ahead and offer that. Senator Rood offers... Go ahead.
The A5 amendment,
Senator
Mr.
Rood
Chair.
Offers the A5 amendment to Senate File 3392. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I'll just go through the amendment so we'll have the bill in the order. So you'll see on page 2, line 2.8, we inserted the word country. You know, we have so many visitors coming to the state of Minnesota from all over, and we didn't want to preclude that, so we listened and we put country in there. Then you will also see on page 3, we changed on 3.25, we had less than and we put up to. We thought it was a better clarifying statement in the bill. Then you'll notice on page 4, we really listened, and you'll see the commissioner must establish a working group. We know that this program must be really comprehensive for our youth, and we want to make sure that it contains aquatic invasive species. We heard that from a group, that we give them really a full range of education on that. And then we wanted to make sure we listened to the resorters. They were concerned about renting boats, and so we put a previous 60 days, so that every time they rented a boat, they wouldn't have to take the same test over and over again. So I think we really listened to the comments that we heard in the past weeks about this bill, and this is, we're still willing to work on any language that needs to go forward, but we think this has done we've done a really good job in listening to the concerns of folks. And this also, if you'll know, this doesn't go into effect for 24 months, so it gives us quite a bit of time to work on a really, really good program going forward, because we want to make it as comprehensive as we can. So with that, Mr. Chair and members, every other recreational product in Minnesota, snowmobiles, off-road vehicles, ATVs, you know, off-highway motorcycles, have put place education requirements and safety training for users, even gun training for use. Additionally, hunters have to go through safety training. So Minnesota is only one of a handful of states that doesn't require boater education. And this would be a nationally recognized online course so that Minnesota boaters can have reciprocity in other states. I think that's it's a really important piece to this bill. We are a land of 10,000 lakes, and we have more than 820,000 registered boats, the first in the nation per capita. And recreational boating is at an all-time high as Minnesotans take to the water in record numbers, especially during COVID. We had 415,000 first-time boaters in 2020. But it was also the deadliest year. 21 was the deadliest year for Minnesotans. So we have an incredible line of stakeholders that have come together. And if you look in your packet, you will see there are stakeholders that typically don't come together on issues, but they know that this is so important to the state of Minnesota and where we are right now. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it over to my testifiers. Ms. Sims, no, we have a virtual. I think Mr. Forrester is virtual.
Mr. Forrester, go ahead. Please identify yourself. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity. Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocates is an association of over 250 lake associations and county coalitions of lake associations, resorts, anglers, marina owners, and others who are working to protect Minnesota's lake and river heritage. This means protecting water quality and protecting and advancing the recreational experiences and the local recreation-based economies in Minnesota. We'd like to thank Senator Rood and Chair Ingebrigtsen for bringing Senate File 3392 forward. Senate File 3392 is critically important to protecting public safety, preventing conflicts among different user groups, and protecting lake ecology. Much work has been done to bring together a broad coalition of groups to work on this issue. And I'd like to thank engaged legislators and key partners, Jill Sims from National Marine Manufacturers Association, Matt Grun, Marine Retailers Association of the Americas, Gabriel Jabor, Tonka Bay Marina, and Joe Schneider with the Minnesota Coalition of Lake Associations for the work they have done to get this bill in shape. Basic boating safety has been well developed. The amendments offered today do much to ensure that ongoing research by the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center and the St. Anthony Falls Lab at the University of Minnesota will allow the Minnesota DNR to work with partners to build an educational track that will protect public safety, decrease the risk of aquatic invasive species spread, lower user conflicts, and protect shorelines, lake sediments, and lake ecology, so that the critical resource services of our lakes can be maintained even as boating recreation expands into the future. Thank you.
We'll hold up the questions until everybody testified. Thank you again, Ms. Sims.
Jill Sims, National Marine Manufacturers
Association. I'm sorry, I forgot. Welcome to the committee.
Jill Sims, National Marine Manufacturers Association. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to encourage you to support SF 3392. I represent the boat, engine, and marine accessory manufacturers, including many Minnesota brands that boaters know and love. It's clear Minnesotans love boating, as Minnesota continually leads the way by ranking second in the nation, only to Florida, for boat registrations, with over 825,000 boats. However, Minnesota is falling behind in boater education and safety training. Every recreational product in Minnesota, such as ATVs, snowmobiles, off-highway vehicles, requires safety training except for boats. Of the top 10 boating states by registration, Minnesota is the only state that does not require boater education that extends beyond youth. In fact, nearly 40 states have boater education requirements to keep all users safe on the water. As we continue to see significant growth in boating to the tune of 16,000 new boat registrations in the last 2 years in Minnesota, it is our responsibility to look out for our community. One concerning statistic from the U.S. Coast Guard indicates that 77% of boating deaths occurred where the operator had no safety instruction. However, that number drops to only 12% when the operator has received a nationally approved boating safety certificate. This is a no-brainer. Boater education courses dramatically improve a boater's chance for a safe and fun time on the water. This will help make a huge difference for Minnesota boaters and lake users for years to come. In closing, we're extremely proud to work with a coalition of stakeholders, including the Minnesota Lakes River Advocates, Mincola, Tonka Bay Marina, law enforcement, resorts, and other marine businesses to support this effort. Thank you to Senator Rood for bringing forward this important legislation. Committee members, we encourage you to support SF 3392, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. Those are compelling numbers, for sure. Next up, we have Lieutenant Adam Block. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Adam Block. I am the state boating law administrator for the DNR. During the 1990s, Minnesota was one of a handful of states that required our youth to obtain boater education if they chose to navigate our waterways. However, fast forward to today, and more than half of the country has expanded their boating education requirement beyond their youth. In Minnesota, we know education makes our waterways safer. During the 1990s, we averaged 148 non-fatal boating accidents a year. After about three decades of requiring our boating youth to obtain boater education, our non-fatal boating accidents fell to an average of 71 from 2010 to 2019 as boating use increased. In the past 2 years, we have added over 16,000 motorized watercraft to our waterways, putting Minnesota in the top five in the country for total motorized watercraft registrations at over 624,000 at the end of 2021. With boating activity continuing to increase in Minnesota, law enforcement has witnessed the challenges lakeshore owners, boaters of all experience levels, and other water enthusiasts have been facing, including water use conflict, reckless and distracted operation, and impaired operator violations, to name a few. Unfortunately, last year, Minnesota had 18 boating fatalities, a number we have reached only 3 times since 2005. The DNR supports expanding Minnesota's boater education requirement. Providing this knowledge to a broader boating audience will help all Minnesotans and those that visit have a more safe and enjoyable day on their favorite waterway. Thank you.
Again, those are very compelling numbers. Thank you. Next up, Hennepin County Sheriff Captain Shane Magnuson. If you're there, please identify yourself and go ahead. Welcome to the committee.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Shane Magnuson. I'm a captain with the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. I've been with the Sheriff's Office for over 22 years, and I am currently in charge of all uniform enforcement, including water patrol. I'm here as a law enforcement officer who has not only been responsible for enforcement on the water, but has been responsible for investigating tragic boating accidents and recovery operations. I am here today to support the Minnesota Voters Education Bill. I've seen what happens when voters do not have basic voting knowledge. I've had to share with families that their loved one was gone. We know that many of these accidents were preventable. I believe that education is a vehicle that will create a safer and more enjoyable lakes and rivers for all users. There is required education for cars, snowmobiles, ATVs. Boats are less intuitive to operate. That fact becomes evident in just a couple hours on a busy lake. On a daily basis, deputies and conservation officers see people who do not have basic boat operation knowledge. Besides the safety aspects of boaters' education, we must consider quality of time spent on our waters and the ability to share our waters with all user types. There are competing interests on the water: towed sports, paddle sports versus fishing, and other activities. We hear some groups wanting restrictions for other users. Education should be the first step before new restrictions are imposed. Teaching basic etiquette can help everyone enjoy their time on the water. For example, if you understand how to reduce waves when picking up a wakeboarder, or understand how speed and distance from canoers can reduce conflicts, we can make time on the water more enjoyable for all. Most of my professional time on the water has been on Lake Minnetonka. This is a very busy lake with many different lake users. In 2021, a wakeboard association was formed by private citizens to provide boaters education. They reached over 1,000 water enthusiasts. By the end of the summer, HDSO Water Patrol was receiving emails from homeowners on how much better wakeboarders had become regarding issues like noise and high waves. This is a small example of what effective education can do. This program provided a near immediate return that benefited all lake users. Minnesota is behind most states in boaters education. I'm currently going to Lake the Ozarks this summer. To operate a boat in Missouri, you must have boaters education if you're born after January 1st, 1984. This is becoming a norm across the country. This bill addresses key issues that law enforcement encounters on the water. Born on date, July 1st, 1987, will reach people that we are most likely to deal with in an enforcement capacity. Phased-in approach gives time for everyone to get licensed. Clarification on what a youth operator is by having one age for all watercraft, and rental requirements to make sure all operators understand basic rules. Never heard anyone make the argument that less education is better. We want to give Minnesotans the best chance of making our waters safer and more enjoyable for all users. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Captain, for the testimony. Next, we have Joe Schneider, MCOLA.
Minnesota College. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Joe Schneider, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Coalition of Lake Associations. We're volunteer, nonprofit, and we work to help protect Minnesota's public waters. Our organization is made up of coalitions of lake and river associations across the state, as well as individual lake and river associations. In my role as president of Minnesota COLA, I am here to encourage you to support Senate File 3392. Making Minnesota lakes and rivers safer for recreation and protecting these waters from negative ecological impacts are critical focus areas for MnCOLA. The proposed watercraft operator's license, coupled with mandatory education, is a big step forward in addressing both the safety and ecological impacts. Recently, we partnered with a few organizations who also believe a watercraft operator's license will make a big difference. Though we haven't partnered before, and often we are seen as not necessarily on the same side of the table, we all agreed on this important need, and we felt that being locked at the hip on this important issue would help speed its passage. Today, you've heard from these organizations along with law enforcement on the need to move this legislation forward. The education component is critical to making voter safety for all users, voting safer for all users on the water, and for all people who enjoy the water from a dock or a shore. By addressing AIS education as the amendment asks, we can now help voters understand the impacts AIS has done and the best practices they should use to help slow the spread. And we look to the education to protect shorelines and lake beds from powerful waves and downward thrust of propellers. MnCOLA was actively involved to help fund the wake research done at the U, and we hope this groundbreaking study will guide the best practices for boating in the education. And the U's phase two research on propeller thrust will help define yet another important element of boating best practices. Our coalition believes that education must consider all the users of the public waters. And as Minnesota COLA, we look forward to having the opportunity to work with the DNR on this important education. With that, I'd like to thank you for your time and attention today.
Thank you very much. And next, we have the Community Minnesota Resorts, Joel Carlson. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members.
Welcome.
Happy to be in front of you once again. I'm Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Community of Minnesota Resorts, which are the way that many Minnesotans are able to access our outstanding natural resources. And I want to recognize and acknowledge all the changes that Senator Root has made to this bill and her willingness to work with us as resort operators who also in many instances also rent watercraft to their guests. The Community of Minnesota Resorts is very supportive of training and education. We recognize how important that is to reduce conflict on the lake. And so I want to acknowledge a couple points, Mr. Chairman, on the record, to make a record of this. And one of those is on page two of the bill as it relates to exempt operators. As has been referenced here, multiple states do different training, and those people coming to Minnesota to stay at our resorts would be exempt from obtaining a Minnesota certification. We just want to make sure that resort operators that are leasing boats don't have to become an expert in all 49 other states. We're taking their word for it that they comply with their requirements from their other states, and you know, we don't have much to do with it after that. If they're a non-resident and from another state, they're exempt from the bill, and we don't have to go and investigate further on that. We want to make sure that that's clear. Also, Mr. Chairman and members, as it relates to the amendment that was added relative to creating a work group at the Department of Natural Resources, we really applaud that effort and would maybe even go a step further that they come back to you in January of 2024, at least 6 months before this goes into effect, so that we can tell you how it's going. There are issues that we need to work through as to how small operators are going to administer the test, what the record keeping is going to be, and so we want to be actively engaged in that process to make sure that we can do it. When you have changeover on the Saturday and you bring in 40 new guests, trying to give them all a new test from the DNR in one day is not necessarily going to be easy. She's fixed that requirement in the amendment by saying if they've had the test before, within the last 60 days, they don't have to take it. If they rent from you 3 days out of the time they're there for their 2 weeks, they don't have to take the test every time. So Senator Root has fixed a lot of the issues that we pointed out for her, and we look forward to continuing this conversation and appreciate everything you're doing.
Thank you.
Happy to answer any questions, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Members, are there any other testifiers, Senator Root?
Not that I have,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
Members, any questions at all?
Mr. Carlson, while he's up there, I know you represent the resort folks. I was just trying to look on page two of the bill. Is there any concern about liability for the resort owners? Does there need to be additional liability protections? Because that's one area of concern I had for the resort folks. If you could speak to that.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Eichhorn, I'm happy to come and visit with you offline on this topic as well. We don't think that it increases their liability at all. You know, they're responsible operators. If there's an accident on the water, that's going to be not so much by what the resort did to put the boat on the lake, but what the operator did on the waterway. And so we don't think that really increases that. But I'm happy to visit with you offline about that as well.
So let me ask this question. So the liability does not follow the boat operator out onto the lake?
Follows the operator, but not necessarily.
Not necessarily the resort.
Right.
Okay. All right. Sure.
And, you know, as you know, I do a little bit of work in this area as well. And,
yep.
I couldn't say that, you know, someone wouldn't maybe try and bring an action, but this is generally going to be based on, such a case would be based on what everyone's facts were, what negligence they might have brought to the, you know, to the situation, and simply leasing a boat to someone who maybe does something that is negligent and causes an injury doesn't have a real impact in our estimation as we've reviewed it. Okay. On the operator itself, or the, thanks. Excuse me, the resort owner leaser itself.
Follow up, Senator?
Not to that.
Okay.
I do have one other one.
Okay, go ahead.
So the only other question I have, I'll try to keep it to just the fiscal parts since we're the Environment Finance Committee. I didn't see a fiscal note. Has there been one requested? I'm just curious kind of what the cost is going to be to the state. And then it looks like there will probably be a new fee or a cost to the consumer. Just kind of wondering what the thought is on that. Maybe that's something the DNR can answer, what they're kind of thinking cost-wise, fee-wise.
And maybe I can hold on that question until maybe the testifier. I missed Senator Dibble here. Mr. Senator Dibble, do you have a question of the testifiers before we move into the fiscal note?
No, Mr. Chair, I can wait.
And Mr. Chairman, just to, and I'm have Bob Mayer speak to that, but currently, all 12 to 17-year-old currently take the test and are charged a fee. And so that is not changing at all. And that fee is $24.95 per user fee. It is the same fee that you pay for ATVs, for all your safety classes. It is done through a vendor and not through the DNR. And so there, I can have Mr. Meyer speak specifically to Chapter 16 and how it works. But we are, the new fee would be only for the people older than 17, but currently the 12 to 17 year olds already pay this fee when they take their test. So we are not changing that. And I will tell you that we have worked really hard to make sure that we have changed the 12 year old. So it's consistently with all the safety classes. So whether you take your ATV, your boating, your hunting, it's all that 12 year old trigger. Some of them can take the class like the boating class or the ATV class when they're 11, but it doesn't come into effect until they're 12 years old. So 12 year olds is really when you're a family. We've tried to be consistent so the families would know that at 12 years old, this is the time to take your safety training for all the fun things that you like to do. So with that, Mr. Meyer, you want to talk to Chapter 16?
Mr. Meyer, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the record. Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Actually, Senator Root did a great job, but just to go back a second, this program is already online, developed by a third-party vendor that is funded. They pay for the individuals pay that vendor to do their work, just like our firearm safety, ATV, and other programs that are there. So there'll be no cost there. The costs that are established, since it is a private service going to that individual, do not need to be legislatively mandated, authorized per statute, as we have in our other programs. And we have no other cost of the issuing the permits or anything that we would need right now, similar to our other programs that we have. If something does come up as we're working on this bill, we'll work with staff to identify those issues. But as Senator Root said, this is simply an extension of our safety training programs to make it mandatory for watercraft users rather than voluntary right now.
Sure.
Our hope would be that this could be taught in schools after school with snowmobile safety, firearm safety, kind of a seasonal thing. Do the snowmobiling in the fall, the boating in the spring, firearm safety, and just help get that base out there. And really what we'll see is, what I hope to see is the children within their boats telling their mom and dad, hey, you're operating the boat the wrong way. You need to slow down, put your life jacket on. Just as we saw with recycling and other things, right? We need to reinvigorate that kind of learning from the ground up. So we're really excited to be a part of that.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, I just want to clarify. So Mr. Meyer, there's a fiscal note is not needed because basically what you're saying is there is not a cost to the state to do this?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Eichhorn. The fiscal note is completed. You should see it. It does have zero cost on it. I signed off on it a day or two ago, and it's in the pipeline. So,
Mr. Mueller, to the fiscal note.
Mr. Chairman and members, there was a fiscal note requested on this bill. It hasn't gone through the whole process yet. The DNR did sign off on their portion of it, and it does do what Mr. Meyer indicated. The other part of the fiscal note that I saw just this morning is there is a small cost to public safety for Section 7 of the bill that would require designation on your driver's license that you've completed the safety coursework. It's about $115,000. That can probably be, in working with talking to the public safety fiscal analyst, if we are able to figure out a way to meet that cost here in this committee, you wouldn't have to go over to that committee right now. But I'll continue to work with Mr. Meyer and the agency to see if there's any additional language needed in the bill to accomplish what the bill is asking for. But as far as what I can see, the existing authority that they have to charge the fee for the 12 and under would work with the ongoing expanding the program for everyone.
Thank you. Do you have any idea, Mr. Meyer, how many people we're talking about here over a two-year period that would be taking this test?
Mr. Chair, Lieutenant Block may have a better idea. I would assume in the earlier years, trying to catch up with that born-on date, I'll call it, there will be more people than after we get through that group of people and then just the annual basis. So I'm not sure if we have
to. So they'll be paying that fee, and then it'll just basically offset the cost.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that fee goes to the vendor who operates the system.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In formulating a question I had that kind of grows out of my work on the Transportation Committee, I think I answered my own question by taking a closer look at the bill, but I just wanted to ask a couple of things just to make sure I'm clear. So in order to obtain an operator's permit, this is either to Mr. Meyer or to Senator Root, whoever wants to field the question. As I understand, that's just simply a certification of the fact that someone who is going to operate a boat has taken a safety course. There is no testing of the mastery of the subject or any skills testing like a written test or a road test that would be comparable to an automobile license, correct?
Senator Root.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, you know, as we go forward, it's not our intention to have that test, but we are having a working group, and I'm sure that they will make sure that it's comprehensive, and I'm not sure what that will look like, but they could have like a chapter test type of thing, but we're not envisioning that you have to go take a test at the License Bureau in order to get the certification. It would be strictly an online course like you do with your hunter's education, and then you take that education, and then on your license you get your hunter, you know, you can have that put on your license so that you have proof that you did that. But we're not looking at any big tests like at the License Bureau. This would be strictly online program.
And this could also be somebody that doesn't own a boat. I mean, so they wouldn't be able to.
Correct, yeah. Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Does that answer your? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. In any case, I'm glad. I mean, either way, I don't particularly have a position on whether or not testing is important. Totally open to that conversation. I'm very glad that we will be requiring some safety courses. I've tootled around on motorboats a few times. I have only the thinnest of information about all the proper practices. It's amazing. I haven't crashed into someone myself or a dock or something.
You have to stop at all the stop signs and yield signs and all that, yeah.
So I think this is a good thing. I'll definitely take the course because once in a while I'm out on a boat and once in a while they give me the wheel. But my question that is kind of related to my first question, and maybe it's to Mr. Meyer. If we do outsource this, if you will, these safety courses, what assurance will the DNR have that there's a sufficient standard of information that's being delivered, it's being delivered in an appropriate manner, it's being delivered, you know, at all before someone has issued a completion certificate, kind of a quality control check? How does the DNR assure for that?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, great question. And part of the answer will be on the amendment that was offered and adopted, working with that work group to make sure that that curriculum is fitting Minnesota and does everything we want to do. But then also we have contractual obligations with those vendors that we can hold them accountable, and they have performance indicators and things with us as well. So this, it would be my intention, the department's intention, that this work group and the department will sign off on that curricula and what we have and approve it, and it'll move forward and be really successful.
And then, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Then they'll have a mechanism to keep an eye on them to make sure they're doing what they said they do?
That was a question I had as well.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, yes, we're in constant communication with these vendors. It's the same vendor, I believe, for all different pieces of it. So making sure that they're up to date as laws change. As we heard the policy bill yesterday, we'll have to put some new language in there, hopefully, on muzzle loaders with fire sticks, if you want to call them that. But we're updating them and reviewing them annually.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, any other questions?
It might be for Mr. Meyer. So the first question I'd have is for, say, somebody born July 2nd, 1987, that individual, when they turned 12, went and took a boat and water safety course. Is it the intention of either Senator Root or the DNR to make those individuals retake this test? Or does what they took when they were 12 still count?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Eichhorn, if people have the training, we can make sure that they're grandfathered in. That's the way it would work. Also, if you have training in another state, I have a certification from a national organization from many years ago that is still good in Minnesota and actually in Canada. So there is reciprocity across states on those things.
Okay. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Members, any other questions? Well, due to the fact that we do have still some questions on the fiscal note, this will be laid over for possible inclusion. I like the bill. I think it'll be moving forward. But due to the fact we have that, it'll be laid over for possible inclusion at this time. Thank you, Senator Root.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, and we're up against the clock here a little bit, and I'm wondering if we shouldn't probably make everybody come back tomorrow. I think I look at the crowd here, and I see that everybody here is probably here tomorrow too. So we do have a short agenda for tomorrow. So I think what we'll do is we'll go ahead with the Senate File 3751 tomorrow. There's also some questions about some additional dollars. I know there's an amendment floating around out there. I'd like to talk to the author about that. But so right now, I think what we'll do is we'll put that on the agenda for tomorrow, and that'll conclude the meeting for today. Thanks.